Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everyone? This is Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and The Step Back, which is FanSided's new NBA vertical that debuted today, so go follow them on Twitter, like them on Facebook, and read the page. But today is going to be a season preview pod. We have not done an actual Cavs season preview yet. We've done those little crossover pods, but we haven't actually sat down and said, okay, we're going to cover this team and do it, and we're going to do it a little bit differently. So what I have done is I have gotten five members of the Fear the Sword staff who you will meet over the course of the show, and I have written questions that I'm literally going to pick out of a hat, and they're going to answer them pretty quickly. So if there's something you want to hear more on, shoot me an email at lockedoncavs@gmail.com, and we'll maybe do another show about it, and you know, go from there. But this is going to be a quicker preview, kind of cover some of the bigger points of this Cavs season, because again, we haven't done this yet, and I think we needed to do a big preview. Before I introduce today's guest, just a reminder that today's podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek. It's the best way to buy tickets for a concert or a game, like at the World Series or the Cavs season opener, just saying, right on your phone. And today, maybe he'll buy Cavs tickets on SeatGeek at some point in Chicago. It's Fear the Sword and the Step Back's Daniel Rowell. Daniel, what's going on?
I'm doing well. Actually, I like am not joking. I bought SeatGeek tickets when the Cavs were in Chicago for preseason like a week ago. So, like SeatGeek.
Yeah, look at that. So, Dan, first off, are you ready? You're the first one on the show. You're the first one that's going to take part in this grab bag sort of preview. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready as I'll ever be, which is half ready.
All right, so we're going to go first question right out of the hat. True or false, the Cavaliers will acquire someone with one of their trade exceptions?
I'm going to go with false on this one. I think that it's going to be really hard for the Cavs to work one of their trade exceptions, because I just don't see how a team like the Cavs, who already is so stacked between LeBron, Kyrie, and Love, is going to be gifted with another player just by someone else. I just don't see it. I mean, Griffin's done a great job of acquiring all the trade exceptions, but the one thing I've noticed over the past couple years is we haven't really used any of them. So I'm just going to go ahead with no. It's not like a for sure thing, but I would be surprised if we use one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you know, Jacob Rosen's been in the show a couple times, and it's basically pointed out the simple truth that for the Cavs to use a trade exception like they did last year, they have to give something up to make a team basically give them someone for free or at a very low cost. And if your best asset to do that is Iman Shumpert, I'm not sure that's really going to get you much. And I think Cavs fans out there that want like Trevor Ariza or someone, that is a quote-unquote pipe dream for that to really work. So don't get your hopes too high. Daniel, I think, hits that spot on. So we're going to move on to question number two. You got another true and false, Dan. True or false, LeBron James wins the MVP in 2016-17.
Okay, no one log off. I'm going to say false, and everyone's going to hate this. But all right, I think Russell Westbrook's a popular answer, but I'm going to go with Kevin Durant. And I know, you know, I hate the Warriors. They blew a 3-1 lead. Kevin Durant also blew a 3-1 lead. Just keep that in mind. But Kevin Durant is still going to be, I think, motivated more than most of the players to actually get out there and put his box scores up. And I think that a lot of people are picking Westbrook as a trendy pick, but I really think the Thunder are going to be terrible. And I think the key to an MVP season these days is you have to be on one of the top three teams. And so that's looking at players like LeBron and players like Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. And I would really think that the Warriors are going to make sure to make Kevin Durant feel at home, and I think they're going to try and make it work with him. So I expect LeBron to be taking his time off, you know, taking a nice sabbatical, maybe go down for some March Madness down in Miami again. And I would think that Kevin Durant is going to be cooking all season long.
I think the Durant pick's actually not as takey as I think some people might think it is, and it only for this simple reason. I think he's the best player in the Warriors. I think his numbers are going to be absurd. He's going to be more efficient. They're going to win a ton of games. If we go by the normal metric of best player on best team, which has really been what it's been the best last 2 years with Curry, and Curry also has just been unbelievable, and so not like throwing really much shade at him, but Durant would fit that role this year. I know I think there will be some splitting of the vote between Durant and Curry, and also, but I also don't think there's going to be as much angst and kind of voter discomfort with voting for Durant, because it's not as, he's not going to be as hated as LeBron. I think some people are going to view him funnily and kind of rag on him because it's kind of easy to, but I don't think the hate is as strong as it was with LeBron, because how LeBron left and how KD left, they're both not perceived well. But LeBron did it on national television in this like kind of contrived thing and left the city he was, you know, playing for. KD left Russell Westbrook, and Russell Westbrook becomes this very sympathetic figure in all this, which I think helps his MVP candidate in some way, candidacy in some way. But I don't think KD's the hate against KD is going to be there as much.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's spot on.
If you were gonna say where LeBron, and by the way, I'll say this real quick. I'm gonna go ahead and pick LeBron for MVP. I think he's gonna play in 70 games. I think his numbers are gonna be pretty great as usual. And I think they're gonna be the best team in the East. And I think he gets the non KD vote. So LeBron is my pick because, kind of like you said, I'm not sure how good the Thunder are actually gonna be. They need to win probably 50 games for Russ to get in there, and I'm not sure that happens. You look at someone like Kawhi Leonard, who I think is a very good candidate. Are the Spurs going to be good enough in the West to get there? I'm not sure. You know, Paul George is someone who I think wants to be in the conversation. I'm not sure the Pacers are going to be good enough. If you're an 8 seed in the East, and that's where they realistically could end up, or even if they get to 4, that's not high enough for me to get him in MVP discussion. Harden, I think if he had a really insane year, could get there. There's a couple guys, I guess, but I think LeBron, I think he gets, this will be his last one, but if he only plays in like 65 games, I think he takes himself out of the conversation. Let's say, Dan, if you weren't going to pick KD or LeBron, or let's say Curry, who would you pick?
For MVP?
Yeah.
Oh, KD for sure.
I mean, just saying if you weren't going to pick KD, LeBron, or Curry.
Oh, if I wasn't going to pick them? Yeah. Oh, well, I think, I mean, the one way I look at this season is it feels like another one of those times where we're waiting for somebody to claim next. And I think there's a couple candidates. There's Harden in the Rockets, who's going to be with D'Antoni. I mean, D'Antoni just gives you so much in terms of like offense. I mean, when players start with D'Antoni, they just have some of their best seasons. I wouldn't be surprised if Harden goes next level and finally discovers he's a point guard and becomes MVP, or a player like Anthony Davis, who everyone expected to be in the MVP running last year and had his injuries and off-season trouble. He's starting off this season with yet another injury, so I'm a little skeptical about that one, but I wouldn't be surprised if he, again, has some of that motivation, especially with Alvin Gentry, who I think is on a hot seat as a coach, to actually just go do it. So yep. We'll see.
Yeah, I think I've heard some people throw out their Karl Anthony Towns because he is next, but it's way too early for Cat. He might not even make the All-Star team. Like, there's a chance he is All-NBA and doesn't make the All-Star team, I think, because of how the position differences are. Because there's centers on the All-NBA mm-hmm. team, but there's not a center position in the All-Star voting or coaches selections. He gets lumped in with like all those really, you know, all those frontcourt guys, and there's just a lot of them out west, and a lot of them are a little bit older, more popular, or something like that. Like, theoretically, let's say Cat's better than Dirk this year. Dirk's probably going to get more votes than him.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty fair. KD's not a bad pick. I think out of those two in Golden State, he is more likely to win than Curry, but I totally could be wrong about that. So we're going to move on to Dan's last grab bag question, then we'll get his take on the whole season for the Cavs, because these questions are going to be a little bit more nuanced and more specific things. And I know which one he wants, so see if he gets it. All right. You got another big-name Cav here, Dan. Predict Kevin Love's season. What will the theme of it be?
I think the theme is going to be trade deadline. Will we trade Kevin Love? And I think the answer is no. I mean, he finally got out from under a lot of the criticism about his defense against Steph Curry. I don't know if that actually changes his ability to trap the pick and roll, but I do think that he's going to be a lot more relaxed in his approach this season. I think LeBron's going to be looking to Kevin to actually carry a lot of this team on offense if LeBron tries to take it slow, save it up for the playoffs. So I think this is a season where Kevin Love actually finally starts to find his role within the Cavs organization and is a little bit more comfortable. So I think it's a lot of media questions about whether he's going to get traded or not, because he is kind of probably our best trade asset if things don't go right for the Cavs this season. But I think instead we're going to see Kevin Love finally, you know, becoming the third best player on this team. So
I think that's pretty good. I think he's been the third best player on the team already. I know Thompson's been great, but I think Love still has been better because he's just a more complete player. And I know the defense thing matters, but he's still been good, even if he hasn't been what we exactly thought he might be. I think it's going to be interesting is, does his body language keep up over the course of the year? And I know that's reading into things a little bit there, but he looks happier in the preseason. And I don't know if you saw this really in Chicago, but every preseason game I've watched, he has just looked like a happier human being. He has looked like someone who is enjoying being with the Cavs, who is enjoying just kind of actually being on this team and having fun with this group of guys. So to me, I feel a little bit better about where he is and who he is as a player this year, just because I think he's going to be happier. The winning the title seems to just have unburdened him in so many ways. It unburdened LeBron. I think it unburdens everyone, but it might affect Kevin more than anybody else. And I can imagine that it won't be a good thing, and I hope we see some more of him with bench units, just getting some more organic elbow and post touches. And I think that's something really to watch. To me, he might be one of the more interesting guys on this team this year. I feel like I know what I'm getting out of LeBron in a lot of ways. What he does will be interesting, but I don't know if it like captivates me all the time. Like, what he does will be great, but does the nuance of it matter as much? Or is it, I guess it matters, but is it going to really pique my interest as much? I want to see how Kevin Love year three, if first year under Ty Lue, if there is any change.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty good answer, Dan. So before we let you go, I'm asking this to every person who comes on the show today. Who will be, cut that last part out because I fucked that up. We're just going to look at the general season outlook. Give me, what do you think is your prediction for how the Cavs will do this year?
So I think the over-under number I checked last was about 57 wins.
Yeah, 50, I think that's 56. I think it's 56.5 is like the official one, but 57 is kind of, I think, where most people are guessing.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go a little bit lower. I'm like Daniel Downer here this day, but I'm going to go with a 55-win team. I think the Cavs are still going to win the Central and the Eastern Conference without really any contention, and will be facing Golden State in a third matchup. And if I had to pick a winner, I would say we all win because it's going to be the greatest basketball series of all time. So I'm ready for the Cavs to take a run at a repeat title, but I do think that just for the regular season, this is a 55-win team, where LeBron is going to be looking for some rest to get ready for what's ahead in April.
Fair enough. Dan, where can people find you on Twitter? And did I miss anywhere that your work is appearing right now?
You can find me on Twitter on Daniel J. Rowell. And Step Back just started. I have a lot of artwork up with that for the season previews. And I have a feature coming later in the week on actually LeBron James. So look for that. Thanks. This is great.
Yeah, always glad to have you on, Dan. Also, check out his Tee Public store. There's a ton of great stuff there. So go check that out because it's pretty cool. So, Dan, thanks for coming on. Next up will be Trevor Magnotti from Fear the Sword and Upside and Motor and everything, and he writes, you know, pretty easily almost, I feel like, every site on the internet right now. But before we get to Trevor, we're going to take a break and hear from SeatGeek. Hey everyone, just want to give you a quick word from our sponsor SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the games or concerts you want to see up close in person. There's nothing like being there for the Kanye West concert, or the Cavs season opener, or the Indians World Series games that you want to see, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for a great value. Right in the app, SeatGeek is going to rate all of the tickets for you. You're going to see if they're a good deal or a bad deal. If they're green, they're good. If they're red or orange, they are bad. And you're going to actually get to see what the view from your seat would look like right in the app. They collect tickets from every possible site out there, so there's no way you're not going to get the best deal by using SeatGeek. Myself, I'm trying to get Indians World Series tickets. I want to see my team play and maybe win a second title for Cleveland, and I'm going to use SeatGeek to the apps. It's the best way I know I'm going to get a good deal and get the kind of seat I want to watch Corey Kluber or Trevor Bauer pitch in the World Series. And today, my listeners can get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do to get that $20 rebate is download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code LOCAVS, that's for Locked On Cavs, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So again, all you have to do, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, enter the code LOCAVS, and SeatGeek is going to send you $20 for that first purchase. So again, download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LOCAVS today, and make sure you go to the game you want to see this season. And we're back. Thanks again to SeatGeek for sponsoring this podcast. And now we're joined by Trevor Magnotti from Fear the Sword, Upside of Motor, well, the Step Back now, I guess, and a bunch of other places. Trevor, how's it going?
Good. Good.
As just so the listeners know, to recap that last segment, this is what we asked Dan. True or false, LeBron James wins MVP in 2016-17. Predict Kevin Love's season, what will the theme of it be? And true or false, will the Cavs will use a trade exception for someone? First question, we're going to pick it out of the hat. And it is, true or false, Kay Felder plays more games than DNPs?
Ooh.
This to me, for the listeners out there, as Trevor thinks about this, when I was writing these questions, this may have been the hardest one for me to answer.
Yeah, it's a tough question because it's so closely predicated on the answers to a couple of these other questions. It really doesn't so much depend on Felder. It depends on can they find somebody, either through trade exception, the free agent market, whatever, to fill that backup point guard role. And it also kind of depends on Jordan McRae. If he, you know, can step up and become a member of the rotation, Felder's probably not going to play a ton. I think this is going to end up being false. I think that Felder's going to play, you know, probably somewhere in like the 20 to 30 game range, is kind of an end of the bench guy. I think he's going to get some significant time with the Canton Charge. I think he might play a little bit early on in the season, until they kind of get their rotation solved, just to kind of throw him out there and see what they have in him. And then I expect, you know, maybe around December he becomes more of a full-time Canton member. And then they bring him back up late in the year when they're resting guys or if there's injuries. But I'm not really seeing that Felder's going to be a regular member of the rotation by any means. I expect probably about, you know, 20 to 30 games unless something goes horrifically wrong.
I think that's fair. I think that's where I stand, too, because the more and more we've gotten closer to the season, I believe that they're going to make a deal for a backup point guard. I believe that they are going to definitely do something, whether it's get Mario Chalmers, make a deal with the Jordan McRae, Mo Williams package if some team's crazy enough to give the Cavs something for that. So there's definitely a couple things at play. And I also think there is a chance he hits the over on this and plays more than DNPs just because if they wait until December or January, but also think they want to make a move now. That's the vibe I get from this team. And I personally think that playing for the Charge is maybe the best thing for him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that getting him some time to, you know, work on some of the parts of his game that he's going to be asked to do just by virtue of sharing the floor with some of the other guys on the roster is going to be good for him. Because, for example, Felder's not really a great three-point shooter, and that's something that the Cavs need to work with him on. And he's also not really a guy who plays or who's used to playing at the tempo that the Cavs would prefer to go at. He played at a very wide-open system at Oakland. Got to make a lot of quick, simple decisions just because of the speed that they wanted to operate at. I don't think he's really ready for initiating a half-court offense in the NBA. I think the defenses are, you know, they're more complex than he's used to. There's more athleticism out on the floor than he's used to, and he's going to have to, you know, he's going to have to learn to pick his spots and be a little bit more conservative than I think he's been in the past. I think that he might run into some turnover issues very early in the season, and I think these are some things that'll get hammered out in Canton, because, you know, for better or worse, the D League is kind of a hybrid between college and the pros in terms of pace. You get some of the more complex systems that are being run in the NBA in the D League, but it's still going to be a very high-paced game, and I think that's going to help Felder adjust. If he can learn to make these decisions and become a better passer at the D League level while he's working on his outside shot, that's going to really benefit him moving forward in the future. So, you know, I think that's the best use of him. I think maybe him getting something like the Joe Harris or Sergei Karasev special, where he's going in between Cleveland and Canton. He's on the bench for Cavs games when they're at home, but otherwise playing with the Charge when they're at home and practicing with both teams. I think that's going to be the easiest thing for him. Just because he's going to get immersed with the roster, but he's also going to get that time where he can, you know, he can really work on his fundamental skills in a game setting.
Yeah, I think that's basically exactly where I stand on Kate Felder and everything with him. All right, number two, let's get it. And the question is, and oh, this is going to be good. What are you expecting out of Iman Shumpert?
Oh boy.
I've given you just the most fun questions, Trevor. I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is a tough one just because it's like, you know, the last 1.5 years that Shumpert's been here, he's really kind of been all over the place. He's had times where he's been unplayable on offense, just because of, you know, his dribbling is what it is. His shooting isn't on. He doesn't always get in the right spots. He's also had times where he's been one of the Cavs' best players in terms of just playing to his role. I mean, there was the stretch at the beginning when they got him in the trade where he was hitting, I think, like 45% from three for about a month and a half. There have been times where he's been the Cavs' best perimeter defender. But there have also been times when, you know, he's a complete liability on both ends of the floor. So you throw in the injuries that he's had as well, and he's really been kind of all over the place. So trying to figure out an expectation for him this season is really difficult. I think that, you know, the safest idea is, you know, he is kind of the sum of the parts that he's been over the past 18 months. He's going to be a guy who can occasionally be a good slasher and be a good perimeter shooter on offense, especially when he's wide open. But there are other times when he's going to give you some issues on the offensive end because he's not going to get in the right spots, or he's going to try to initiate the offense himself, which isn't the best idea. Defensively, I think he'll be, you know, he'll continue to be slightly above average. Nothing that is going to, you know, be a liability, but nothing that's going to be your best defensive player overall, or nothing that's going to be consistent. I still think that secretly J.R. Smith is the more consistent defender than Shumpert, and I kind of expect that this year as well, that's going to continue. But, you know, the Shump will step up in some big moments for them defensively. And he's overall going to be a help to this team. As far as the trade speculation that there's been, you know, I think it's going to take something to truly wow the Cavs to be able to pry him out, just because he is so well received in the locker room. At least it seems. And
he's hard to be honest. He's kind of hard to replace. And yeah. He's out of their backup wings. He's the only one on the right side of 30.
Exactly.
Well, I don't. And I'm not counting Jordan. Just for other people are like, oh, Jordan McRae. I'm not counting Jordan McRae in that group because I'm skeptical he's actually going to be a rotation player.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, the idea is there are upgrades out there that the Cavs could find for Shumpert. I mean, there are guys that are going to be available. Aaron Aflalo, Courtney Lee, who's my pet guy that, you know, if things go south in New York, the Cavs should really try to throw a package at the Knicks to try to pry him out of there, just because he's everything that the Cavs expect Shumpert to be, except he actually does it night in, night out. But, you know, at the same time, you're really going to have to win a trade to be and hope that another team, you know, is in a really bad spot with a 3-and-D guy. Either from a contract perspective or a locker room perspective, to be able to pry them out of there for Iman Shumpert, because anybody that's going to be an upgrade for the Cavs, getting Iman Shumpert is probably going to be a downgrade for that team. There's nothing that really sets him apart from some of the other, you know, mid-tier 3-and-D guys in the league. So, you know, I expect him to be a full member of the Cavs through the entire year. Unless something crazy happens, and I think you're going to get more of the same from him. I think you're going to get inconsistency. You're going to get generally okay to great defense, and don't let him handle the ball at the top of the key when it matters.
Yeah, I think I'll say this, and we'll move on to the next question. Here's the two things I think about Shumpert that I'm really interested in seeing. One, I firmly believe they're going to try him in some sort of backup point guard role. I think some of that is going to involve him playing with this lineup. Shumpert, J.R. Smith, LeBron, whoever. If it's Dunleavy or Richard Jefferson, and then Channing Frye or Kevin Love at the five. I think they're going to put him around with shooters, and I think they're going to try that. And like I said, I think there's really an argument to be made that he is the most important bench player on the Cavs. Like, I really think, because Richard Jefferson is older, because Dunleavy's a little older and has the back issues, because I don't really think Channing Frye, as useful as he is, really moves the needle as much when you have Kevin Love, LeBron, and Tristan Thompson functionally ahead of him in the front court. Shumpert just has such a big role to play, and I think he's maybe really key. They need a very good year of Shumpert to really, I think, be the best version of themselves this year. And we'll have to see if we get it, because we haven't really seen, aside from those first like 4 weeks he had with the Cavs, really a good amount of Shumpert in Cleveland, to be honest. Next question, Trevor's second to last one, and then we'll ask about his take on the whole season. And I'm kind of glad you're getting this one, because to me, you're the person I want answering some of the, giving me a crazy answer, because you're our crazy answer guy for the sword, and that is not a slight, that is a good thing. Give me a random prediction for the 2016-17 season.
One of my favorite things is looking at projected lineups in the preseason and trying to figure out what the most effective lineup is going to be for a certain team. I think that one of the most effective lineups that the Cavs are going to run out this year, and this will kind of go in with the backup point guard conundrum. I think that one of the top three lineups that the Cavs are going to have in terms of effectiveness among lineups that they'll go to commonly, Iman Shumpert, J.R. Smith, LeBron James, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson. I think that point guardless lineup that I've kind of been preaching is something that could be an answer for the entire summer. I think that that's something that the Cavs are going to go with, and I think it's something that's going to work. I really think this because, you know, the Cavs are one of the few teams that can do this because they have LeBron James, because they basically always have a point guard on the floor with him. They'll have J.R. Smith, who can be a secondary creator. They'll use Kevin Love a little bit more at the elbow in this lineup, just because they're going to have the little extra space, because they won't have Kyrie Irving on the floor. They'll go to him, and they can go to him in the elbow and use his passing to kind of generate offense. They'll have spot up shooters with Love, Smith, and maybe Shumpert, depending on the day. And defensively, you've got, you know, 3 through 5 is going to be fine. You stick Kevin Love on the more post-oriented opponent. You stick Tristan Thompson on the guy who's going to be running the pick and rolls. You stick LeBron on whichever perimeter scorer you want. And then you've got Iman Shumpert to guard point guards, and you got J.R. Smith to guard shooting guards.
I like it.
But, yeah, but the biggest weakness with this group is, I mean, it's probably shooting, just because you're not really going to have – you're going to have one non-spacer with Tristan, and you're potentially not going to have a third one depending on how – a third shooter, I mean, depending on how Shumpert and LeBron are shooting. But playmaking-wise, I think you're fine. Rebounding-wise, I think you're fine. Defensively, I think this works really well. You only have to hide one guy. I really like this lineup. I think it's something that the Cavs should really try, and it all kind of comes from LeBron's passing ability, and I think that they can let him be the primary ball handler and just, you know, run this lineup out for 3-4 minutes at a time in a second quarter against a bench unit for the other team, and they're going to have some success with this group, and you know the transitions in and out of it are going to be pretty easy. Like, you can sub in Richard Jefferson or Mike Dunleavy for LeBron if you want to get him a breather. You can also put one of them at the four. You can bring Channing Frye in at either of the forward spots. And then, obviously, either of the shooting guards can be switched out for McRae, for Kyrie. So, it's going to be easy to get in and out of the lineup, too, in the rotation.
I like it. This is my random prediction, and it is that LeBron James will not lead the Cavs in scoring this year. And that, obviously, for most people would assume Kyrie Irving will lead the team in scoring, and that's where I would go to. I think that's going to happen, because I'm not sure exactly how much LeBron's going to play. And I just have a really big feeling about what Kyrie is going to be this year. But we'll see. So, Trevor, before we let you go...
Yeah, and I don't think... I don't think that that's that far-fetched, because it's a difference of, like, Kyrie averaging 25 points per game, and instead of LeBron averaging about 25, 26, maybe he's at like 24, 7, and 9 for his averages. Maybe he puts up like 9 assists per game instead of 26 points. Like, that's not that far-fetched. He's not that far off from either of those.
Right. So, Trevor, before we let you go, what is your season prediction for the Cavs? So just give me your general feeling of how the season plays out.
I think they'll probably get off to the same kind of, you know, wishy-washy start that they got last year. Just because they're going to be integrating J.R. Smith back into the fold, and you know they're an older roster, who's kind of breaking in some new pieces on the bench. I think that they'll probably finish about around the same total that they did last year, maybe in kind of that 55 to 58 win range. I think they'll be the one seed in the East, and I think that they're going to run through the East with minimal challenge. Maybe they get one or two series that go 6-7 games. And then, you know, we're getting Cavs Warriors 3.
And, I think that's kind of where I'm at, too. And I'll give my official prediction in the last segment of the show. But, Trevor, thanks for coming on. And if people want to keep up on everything that you're doing, where can they find you on Twitter?
I am at Illegal Screens.
Yeah, so follow Trevor. He's not Kurt Rambis, which I say every time around the show. And we're going right into our next guest. Thanks to Trevor for popping on. And now we're joined by Michael Drapcho, another Fruit of the Sword writer. Mike, how's it going?
It's going great, man.
Going good. So, last we had, as you heard Trevor answer a couple questions, we're going to do the same thing with Mike, and we go into the hat. First one, true or false,
Love, Kyrie, and LeBron all make the All-Star game.
That's tough. I'm going to say false. I think LeBron and Kyrie both make the All-Star game, but I still feel like there are some issues as far as how Kevin Love's going to be used that have not been resolved as of yet. Even in the finals, we still saw him struggle, and I think this year will be his best season with Cleveland by far, but I don't know if it's enough to get him into the All-Star game.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm going to say yes that he does make the All-Star game, but I don't think he's getting voted in. I think it's going to be LeBron and Kyrie that get voted in. I think that's, you know, like those two should be voted, like Lowry could get a vote in, and you know there's other guys, but to me it would be Kyrie being the likely guy point guard. LeBron's obviously getting voted in.
Like, oh yeah, that's a given every single year.
Right. So with Love, you know, does the coach put him? Is he a coach selection? I think I say yes because I think they won the title. I think he's going to be better perceived. But let's say he's only averaging like 14 points. Is that enough? I'm not sure that would be enough. Like if he drops that low, or if he's at 16 again, and he isn't having a good statistical year, that maybe he doesn't get in then.
Right, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking even if he's, you know, shooting a good percentage and playing well, if he's still only averaging 16, maybe even 17-9, I don't think that's enough to get him into the All-Star game.
Yeah, I think he deserved it last year, to be honest. And I think if he has a better year this year, he should get in. But I wouldn't consider him a lock by any means. If I was going to say one of them wasn't going to make it, I think Love's pretty much the clear answer. And yeah, of course, if Kyrie gets hurt or something, that would take him out of the running, too. Because that's really part of the reason why he didn't make it last year, because he didn't play until December.
Right.
All right, so question number two. True or false, the Cavs will sign or trade for a veteran point guard at some point this season?
I'm going to say true. You know, we've seen them be pretty aggressive in the trade market the last 2 years. And as of right now, that's the big glaring hole, not necessarily hole, but the one thing that if the Cavs are going to go out and get someone, it's the obvious choice. So given their history the last couple of years, going out and getting Shump and JR and then this past trade deadline getting Channing Frye, I'm going to say yeah, they will, especially since they're already discussing it and looking into it.
Yeah, I think I 100% agree with this. I think if you would have asked me 2 weeks ago, I think I might have said no, at least for the first half of the year, because I think I felt like they were going to give McGray that chance and they're going to give Felder that chance. I don't think, I mean, McGray could be traded for, because he's their younger asset, quote-unquote. Felder, it seems like, was good in the preseason, but I don't know if he was good enough to really feel them comfortable from day one going in. I think the tricky thing is how do they do it and who do they get, because the remaining free agents, unless you're confident Mario Chalmers' Achilles is good to go, and he's not going to have a year where he's just not the same or he can't ever be the same again. I worry about if there's actually a guy available in free agency. Norris Cole signed in China, and he's an NBA out, so he is a possibility, but he's not a good shooter, and you know, I think he's maybe a tad overrated. Healthy Chalmers would be great. The trade market thing is interesting because they do have those trade exceptions. They do have picks they could use that are a little, not great picks, but they're picks. And McRae, I guess, is kind of an asset. Teams could save money if they were able to take on Mo Williams because he's still on the roster. So there's a thing the other day where, you know, Joe Varden was tweeted out, you know, keep an eye on this Patrick Beverley thing in Houston, and was like, oh, that's kind of an interesting
thing. Yeah, I didn't see that coming.
I mean, because if you're going to get a guy to be the backup point guard, I mean, Beverley would probably be ideal because he's deli, but better.
Yeah, when absolutely. He's healthy.
I mean, so he'd be ideal, but I don't know how realistic that is. I can't see Houston really giving him up for what the Cavs could offer. And then you think of the Tyus Jones was someone the Cavs were like linked to, or the Wolves looking to trade him, and then there's the Shump thing. If the Cavs wanted Tyus Jones, they would have kept him when they drafted him. And he hasn't done anything in 2 years that has really made me think he's actually like a good NBA player. And I don't know what the Cavs would think to go and trade back for him. I don't know. I'd be really curious to see who they end up, because there are some bad options that I'm not sure are better than Felder. But if it's Mario Chalmers and he's healthy, that to me makes sense. If you were going to say they were going to sign one guy, Mike, who do you think it would, like, if you could pick one in an ideal situation of who you think might be available And Beverly to me seems like maybe a little bit out of the question. Who would it be?
Oh, I think it would be. You just mentioned it, Mario Chalmers. I mean, he already has that history with LeBron. He's always been a solid point guard. It's just, as you mentioned, the one holdup is his Achilles. And, you know, most guys that are coming off Achilles injuries are never really the same, especially at this point in his career. It's not like he's a young guy anymore.
Yeah. I'm going to cut this little audio bit out because I need to look up his age. I should have done that. I feel like he's 30. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, and you're right. Chalmers is 30. Point guards at some point do decline a little bit younger than other players for whatever reason. And 30 is kind of around when that happens. You see guys fall off a little more and the double the Achilles injury. I'd be worried too. It's certainly not an ideal situation there. So we'll go to your next question. All right, so over under on J.R. Smith three-pointers for this season, 204. And if you're wondering why it's 204, that is the number he hit last year. And this is I think this is honestly the hardest question to answer because it depends on so much. But I think it's kind of interesting because J.R. maybe had the best year of his career last year, and he clearly at this point he's a better three-point shooter than anything else. Overall, I think he only shot about 40% from the field last year, but 40% from three. What he does is hit threes for this team.
That is a really tough one. If he hadn't been coming off the holdout and if he hadn't missed most of the preseason and all of camp, I would probably at least say push, but more than likely go over. But considering that he missed that time, and it's going to take him a minute to get back into the flow of NBA basketball, I'm going to go under. And not because I don't think he's on the downtick or anything in his career, just because he missed so much time in it. It does take time to get back into game shape.
Yeah, I think if he struggles to start the year at all, I think it kind of maybe puts him out of contention. It depends on what kind of role he ends up taking. If he has the same type of role he did last year, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he does get to the same type of level, just because that's what he's going to do is shoot threes, and it would take a really hot streak to get him, you know, have a couple good games where he hits like six in a couple of games in a row or something to get him in there. He has to be consistent all year. I think under is likely just because I think there is a chance he could struggle to start the year. But the devil's advocate argument to this, I think, is
last season he struggled for the first half before Kyrie came back. He still put up that number, so
it's possible.
I still don't think he's going to get it, but there is an argument to be made that his early struggles won't affect his potential early struggles won't affect it that much.
Yeah, and I also think there with the Cavs roster set up, if Shump struggles from three, and let's say Dunleavy or Richard Jefferson just isn't effective or gets hurt or something like that, JR has to take on a bigger role at that point.
Right,
and that kind of puts him in a spot where he maybe has to play more minutes in there. He's going to shoot more threes, gets him a chance to there. I kind of hope it happens because I think it'd be really interesting to see what the Cavs offense is like if he's hitting more threes than that. Because he's never going to get to like 400 or anything like Curry did last year, but I mean 250 would be pretty fun.
But
a lot would have to happen for that to really break that way for JR. So, Mike, before we let you go, as we've done with the other two guests, I just want to get your overall take on the season. What are you predicting will happen this season for the Cavs?
Okay, well, for sure, going to make the finals, in my opinion. I don't think there's really anyone in the East that poses much of a threat to the Cavs, even with Boston signing Horford. Historically, he's had a ton of trouble with the Cavs, and they've pretty much done whatever they've wanted to him. And Toronto lost Bismack Biyombo in the offseason, so I don't think that they're necessarily a huge threat to the Cavs. And even though they took two against Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Cavs, it never really felt out of question that they were going to win that series, and they won it pretty handily. So definitely an Eastern Conference championship. I want to pick them to win the finals, but I just don't know how any team has enough to stop Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. That's a four-headed monster. And that's, even if LeBron goes 2016 finals mode where he puts up 41 back-to-back nights and just takes over the game. I don't know if that's enough to slow down a team with all of those threats.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the nuance of some of the regular season stuff should be interesting too. I'll ask you this. Give me a percentage of the chances the Cavs don't finish atop the Eastern Conference in the regular season. Like, so let's say they still make the finals like you're predicting, but let's say they do it as a two seed or something. What are the chances you think that happens?
I think there's a pretty decent chance of that happening simply because of the dreaded championship hangover that, you know, every team that wins a ring seems to go through or seems to dread. But I think it's relatively possible, but or relatively likely, but I don't necessarily think it's going to happen. So I'll say 35%.
Yeah, I think I'm picking them to finish atop the East, but I think if a team's going to do it, it would be Boston, because I think Toronto actually sneakily got a little worse. I'm curious to see how they replace Biombo, even though he did play a little bit over his head in the playoffs. But there's a hold of Valeri. You could argue that was the best you're ever going to get out of Lowry and DeRozan. But Boston is the most, I think, like organized, complete team out of the contenders in the East. But also, I would say this, and I think you agree with this. I don't think it matters necessarily where the Cavs finish in the regular season.
Oh, no, not at all.
There's like a quip in ESPN the Magazine's NBA preview that Easton Sherwood Strauss posed this question to Dave McMenamin. It was like, let's say the Cavs just tank the regular season, are the eighth seed. Are you picking somebody else to come out of the East? And it was just Dave McMenamin wrote, no. Like, just a one-word answer. Like, I think unless something crazy happens, they're coming out of the East.
Agreed, because like I said earlier, there's not a team in the East that scares me enough or that poses that much of a threat. And this team, as we saw this past year, wasn't great in the regular season. Yeah, they won the one seed, but they had their share of troubles with chemistry and, you know, drama in the locker room and this, that, and the other thing. And it once the postseason came around, they flipped that proverbial switch and none of that mattered.
Right.
So I think it's fair to say that to expect more of the same this season.
Yeah. Let's finish on this and then we'll let you go. True or false, and this is just something I keep thinking about, is this the best roster the Cavs have had in the second LeBron era?
Oh, that's tough. I honestly haven't thought about that.
I'll answer while you think about that. I think on the wings it's a little bit stronger. I think the front court is very optimal, even if you don't have necessarily a rim protector. And I think that may matter some. I think that the front court's very custom fit to LeBron and what this team does. I think there's a lot of shooting. I think they still need one more wing, but I would have said that last year. And I'm not 100% sure how much the backup point guard thing matters. And I Dunleavy might have more utility than Dele in a vacuum. So I think I say yes. I think last year, I think it's clearly better than the first year. And with how Timo played last year, that taints how I look at the roster. So I think this year, I think it is the best roster coming into a season.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to agree with you. And you hit on one of the big things that I thought of as you were explaining your reasoning. The fact that Timo was just so bad last year. It was almost like they didn't have a rim protector because he brought little to nothing to the team last season. As good as he was in his first half season with Cleveland last year, he was that bad, it seemed. So losing him and then adding a guy like Dunleavy, like you mentioned, yeah, you know what? You're right. I'm going to go with it. This is the best Cavs roster in the second LeBron era, which I guess means it's the best Cavs roster in any LeBron era, because it's certain, you know, those Cavs rosters the first time LeBron was around were something.
Yeah, if you're a Cavs fan out there that needs perspective, if you're frustrated with them not having a backup point guard or something, just go look at the roster and the starting lineup that they made the finals with during the first LeBron era. Just, I'm not going to name any names. We're not going to dive into this because it's a deep, deep, sad rabbit hole.
We could go for hours.
Just go look and just kind of be like, oh, this is definitely better. So, Mike, thanks for coming on. And if people aren't already following you on Twitter, where can they find you?
They can find me at m_drapcho21. That's m_drapcho21.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99. and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Make sure you follow Mike, and then we're going to go directly into our next guest, which is Alex Ralston, another blogger, and he's our head poet at Fear the Sword. Alex, this is your first time on the show. How's it going, man?
I'm doing pretty good. Looking forward to Tuesday. Should be a really fun day for the city.
Yeah, it's going to be a very – it's just going to be a nuts day. I would ask you this before we get you in the questions. If you could be in Cleveland that day and go to one of those games, the home opener or the first World Series game, which one would you go to?
So I'm actually going to the Indians game. So I'm going to go ahead and pick the Indians game. I'm driving in from Detroit after work on Tuesday and going to the game with my dad. So it should be a pretty fun day.
Dude, that's amazing. That is amazing. Yeah. I am super jealous. I will be at the home opener as for Cavs as media. But that's the World Series, where are your seats at?
So we got the corner alley seats, so standing room basically, with access to fancy beer. But considering my general level of nervousness, I think standing is probably going to be pretty appropriate.
And beer is also probably a good thing.
Yeah, much needed.
Yeah, much needed for that game. It's going to be incredible. I mean, I'm literally taking a half day of work to go down early that day and make sure I'm going to take in the city a little bit.
The crazy thing is, I lived across from Wrigley for a couple years, so I became kind of a pretty big Cubs fan right at the beginning of this sort of renaissance that they're going through. So right when they traded for Rizzo and Epstein got hired, and my wife was talking to me, and she obviously knows I love Cleveland, but we've been to a lot of Cubs games in the last 4 or 5 years, and so she was like, "Is even a fraction of you rooting for Chicago?" And I was like, how are we even married if you think that that's even a question?
That's amazing. That's a good question. Good answer to you. All right, so first question out of your four, technically. True or false, Jordan McRae will become a regular member of Tyronn Lue's rotation?
So I'm going to go ahead and say false. This is a little bit colored by some of the recent reports that they're looking to package him and Mo Williams in a trade. I know that they showcased him a lot in the preseason. He obviously put up a pretty decent amount of points and was impressive along with Jonathan Holmes and Kay Felder. I just think that as far as what the Cavs are going to need in that backup guard position, McRae just doesn't provide a ton of it, and I'd almost rather see Shumpert take those backup point guard minutes. And I know that's kind of blasphemy asking Shump to dribble the ball, but I just am not entirely comfortable with McRae's defense, even though he's so long. I look at him and I think he should be better at defense, but he's just not very good at it, and I think that's going to be ultimately his downfall when it comes to trying to become a regular rotation player.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I find interesting is he when they've showcased him, it hasn't been as the type of player that I think he has to be to stick in the NBA as an off-ball guard. They've been having him really handle the ball, really be a score-first guy from the shooting guard spot. And I understand why they're doing that. And in summer league, it's maybe unavoidable to let him do that. But if he's going to play on this Cavs team, it's going to be off ball, it's going to be him spotting up for threes. He's not going to create very much. And if he was ever going to create, it was going to be if he was the quasi backup point guard, which they abandoned pretty early in the preseason. I'm personally just not a big fan of his. I know that they like him. You see Phil Handy's worked with him a bunch. Shumpert and Kyrie are tight with him. LeBron worked out with him this summer, but I just don't know what I see. And I also just don't, to kind of turn this into what you mentioned, I don't really know what you would get if you're going to package him with anything, because I'm not sure he's actually a guy teams would be like, I'm going to give up someone good. Let's say there's the cryptic Patrick Beverley thing kind of going around. That's is Mo Williams and Jordan McRae really enough to get Patrick Beverley or even a tangible good backup point guard? I'm going to probably say no on that.
Yeah, I would definitely have to agree. And as far as him handling the ball and being sort of that ball in his hands playmaking guard, we've seen Felder just be better at it so far when they've both been on the team. So trying to see what we could get for him makes a little bit of sense, but I agree with you. I'm just not entirely sure how much value he has. I think just not having him on the roster might be the most valuable thing that he could give to the Cavs at this point.
Yeah, I would be very very intrigued to see if what his role actually is, if he ends up sticking around, because he is someone they have tried to develop. But you can't really put him in the can at this point. And you maybe need a wing, I guess. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with him, because he's, I think, kind of represents what they're trying to do with younger players, in the sense that they're trying to develop. They have to develop guys that they pick out of the D-League or pick out of the second round of the draft. So he's kind of a test case, and I don't know if it's worked really well to date.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, the nice part is that the regular season is going to give him, if he's on the roster, some ample amount of time to get some minutes, see what he can provide, because I think, like many fans, I really don't see this team buckling down until late in the second half, so that he's going to get an opportunity to just show just exactly what he can do.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty much spot on take for that. So we'll move on. Next question. This is one of the more interesting questions, and I think it'll really show how you view the season in a way. So the Cavs' over-under is at 56.5. Will they go over or under on that?
So I'm going to take the over, but only because I think that the Central is significantly worse today than it was, say, 3 weeks ago. I live in Detroit, so I'm a pretty plugged-in Pistons guy. And there was a while there, about 3 weeks ago, where I thought Detroit had a chance to be not only the most dangerous team to Cleveland in the playoffs, but a team that challenged maybe Boston in terms of win-loss record. But with the Reggie Jackson injury, with the sort of weird stuff going on in Milwaukee and Chicago, that MCW Tony Snell trade just is kind of a head-scratcher. I can't see that there is a significant improvement in terms of the in-division competition that they're going to be playing. I think Atlanta got worse. So overall, I think that the conference is not nearly as good as it was last year. And I know a lot of people kind of do the, like, lulls the East, you know, the East is so bad kind of stuff. But I think the East in general was a pretty deep conference last year. And we might have seen a little bit more of a talent pooling to one or two teams. Obviously, Boston got better at the expense of Atlanta. And so even though there is going to be this sort of victory lap, I think that LeBron wants to get that MVP trophy. I think that a healthy Kyrie Irving combined with a more seasoned Tyronn Lue is going to help them get over that that win total.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take the over as well, but I think my belief stems in that I believe that Kyrie might, or not Kyrie, LeBron might really go for an MVP, at least in some way, and I'm not going to say he's going to go all out, because I don't think he hasn't done that in really years, really just pursued a regular season, so I don't think he's going to do that, but I think he's going to really kind of push for it, at least take the regular season somewhat seriously, and I also think they're clearly better than, I think they're clearly better than pretty much any other team in the East, to be quite honest. I think like Boston is a very complete team, but I don't think they have really what it takes to beat the Cavs. They might be, and they're built for the regular season too. I should add that. So there's a chance like maybe they do really well. I think Toronto maybe got a little bit worse and maybe peaked last year, but they're still pretty good. Like you said, I think Detroit has the potential to be good, but the Reggie Jackson injury really casts a doubt on their beginning of the season. If he misses, let's say 20 games, that's a lot of games with a
20 games of Ish Smith is not exactly a great scenario.
Yeah, like can you run really simple pick and rolls with Andre Drummond? Sure, but not exactly. You're not gonna get the same level of really just even a Reggie Jackson. I'm not the biggest fan of his. He at least can do that very well, and he was very good with them last year. I'm going to take the over, but I don't think it's a lot over. I could see them hitting 60, but I actually think like 57 to me sounds about right for them, and I think that wins them the number one seed in the East, and I think it's kind of like a ho-hum regular season, even if they do just barely pass it.
Yeah, I do agree with you there, and I think we're going to get a lot of like the East is so easy this year. I think that that's going to be a pretty popular take among the basket blogs.
Yeah, and I think one other thing I'll say about the East, kind of off this, is that I don't know what really to make of it below the top three, because I like Detroit, but if the, again, Jackson's injury, Indiana to me has the potential to be pretty solid, but a lot of it depends on how good Paul George can raise them, and if they can do kind of the things they say they want to do, and I'm really skeptical that Nate McMillan's going to run a fast-paced offense. I'm skeptical of the Wizards. I'm really skeptical of the Hawks. I think they might have regressed because I'm not a big shooter guy at all. And I think you change your identity when you go from Horford to Howard.
And dramatically.
And I have just so many questions about every other team in the East. I don't think they really hit that level. So that to me, if they're going to play a lot of East teams and they're going to, you know, even if it's like LeBron off night, I think a Kyrie and Kevin can probably beat most other teams in the East with the rest of the guys they have in this team.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you.
Yeah, all right. So we'll go on to your last mailbag question here. And this kind of fits in with what we just talked about. What team in the East matches up with the Cavs best when it comes to the playoffs?
All right, so this is going to be kind of a cop-out answer because there are two. Like I just mentioned, I watch a lot of Detroit games, and their general play style, I think we saw it last year in the first round, I just think it is the kind of play style that could give us difficulties. We don't really have someone who matches up super great against Drummond. And then on top of that, if Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is hitting threes more at his 2015 clip than his 2016 rate, I think that offense is going to be kind of difficult to handle, and it's going to require some wing defense that we maybe don't have in spades. So Detroit, I think, could be a team that we could see in the first or second round that I frankly wouldn't want to play. I just think we match up better with the Indianas of the world. And we saw, you know, Stan Van Gundy's a good coach. You know, say whatever you want about the 09 Magic, but that guy can coach basketball. And then Boston. I know that, you know, Brad Stevens has never won a playoff series, and that Tristan Thompson, you know, leases property on Al Horford Island during the playoffs. But they're a good team. They're really deep. They're deep in the wings and at the guard position, which could potentially be a poor matchup for us. And they shoot the three well. And for me, that's sort of the thing that I remember from LeBron's first run in Cleveland, is that if you just run into a team that's shooting really hot, anything can kind of happen. And so as much as it pains me to give Boston any kind of credit, I definitely am a little bit hesitant of playing them, you know, in April or May.
Yeah, I agree. I think those are probably my two favorite answers too, because I think Toronto is good, but I don't really think they match with the Cavs in the same way.
Yep.
And I like Indiana to me is interesting just because they have, I think, the guy who's probably the second best player in the East, and they have the guy who can match up with LeBron at least in some ways, and I think that matters. But
I agree with that.
Yeah. But there's
well, and Miles Turner.
He's interesting.
Miles Turner could get better, and then that could be a really interesting team. I mean, Teague, I'm not the world's biggest fan of Teague, but we've seen him have moments before. So if everything went right for Indiana, they could be a team that could be potentially scary, but that's kind of counting on a lot of development and some pieces coming together in ways that they haven't before, and I like Frank Vogel, so I think him not being there is going to cause some issues, at least at first, for them.
Yeah, I think that is spot on, and I think it's going to be interesting, because I think that's one of the more interesting parts of this year, is really going to see who actually can rise up and really be a team to challenge the Cavs. I think I'm in my mind, I'm penciling in Boston to play the Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals, and I think they do things that present problems, but they're not things that I think are overwhelmingly problematic for this specific Cavs team. I think they're much better suited for the regular season, just because of how much depth they have. But you look at the Cavs, I mean, they don't have anyone to stop LeBron still, really. I mean, Crowder, it'll be okay, but it's not really going to cut it.
Yeah.
They're probably not going to be a great rebounding team, which is really going to matter against the Cavs. I mean, just
absolutely.
Thompson and Kevin Love and LeBron. And if Isaiah Thomas is your best guy to go get buckets at the end of the game, that's okay. But
well, and especially it's like JR's size advantage on Isaiah Thomas is huge.
Yeah, like you can slide Shump or JR, or if you really wanted to get funky, you could probably get away with putting LeBron on him for a possession or two. If you really wanted to get weird, because if let's say they go like a five at the end of a game of Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, Crowder, and Horford. Let's say that, like, that's their five. They go with the three guards, and I don't know if that's exactly what they would do, but let's say they do that. And the Cavs obviously would run. They could go small there. They have options to defend that, but you could probably, in most circumstances, like, get away with putting LeBron on Isaiah for a little bit, or at least putting Shump on him if you wanted to have LeBron be on Crowder, or you worried about the speed thing. If you wanted to get past him and you want to at least just give that to Shump or JR, they can defend Isaiah Thomas a number of ways, I think.
Absolutely. Plus, when they go small like that, I mean, it's kind of a look that the Cavs have already seen a couple of times with Golden State when they do their lineup of death or whatever they want to call it now. And obviously, we've figured out a way to overcome the Warriors' version of that, which has immensely superior talent. So playing
at least
small,
last year's version of that didn't have Kevin.
Right, exactly. Yes, and when they go small, I feel like Boston would just be playing into our hands, because it would allow us to play Tristan at center. And I know he's, you know, he's a center now, but I get concerned when he's got to, you know, go up against Valanciunas or Andre Drummond, but not exactly when he has to go up against Al Horford. And I don't think Boston has the bodies that could wear him down over a series. And we've seen time and time again, when Tristan is fresh or when he's locked in, I mean, the team is completely different in terms of how you have to defend them, what they can do on the offensive glass. And so I think that Tristan is actually, the oddly enough, like, the weirdest problem for Boston in a potential playoff series, even though we have Kyrie and LeBron.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Thompson does present some really interesting problems for them. So before we let you go, Alex, just give me your take on what you think the Cavs' season is going to look like this year.
Yeah, I think they're going to win somewhere between 58 and 60 games. They're going to be the one seed. I do think we're going to get some sky is falling nonsense probably in like December, January, and it'll be kind of overblown, but it's going to happen. I think that LeBron's going to make a serious run at the MVP, but ultimately I think Harden's going to win it, just because that D'Antoni system is kind of tailor-made for Harden, in my opinion. And then once the playoffs get going, I think we're going to see a lot of what we saw last year. And I'm hoping for a trilogy and a rematch against Golden State again in June.
Yeah, I think that is the scenario I think most people are expecting. And I think regardless of what your pick would be today, I think the Cavs would be an underdog on that series, and I don't think that's really putting them in a bad light. I just think just the reality of the situation is they would probably definitely be an underdog in that series.
Absolutely. I think there's no doubt about it. Golden State has made an incredible leap in talent in trying to catch up to the Cavs and getting Kevin Durant. You know, when you don't win the title, that's what you got to do. You got to go out and try to make your team better, and that's what they did. Yeah. And I think that until we see how injuries play out, just on paper, they have the best team in the league. I think last year they had the best team in the league, and it didn't, you know, end up being that way. So anything can happen.
Yeah, they could always blow another 3-1 lead in the finals.
Yeah, exactly. You never know. There's a lot of behind the back passes to be made, and you never know how they're going to play out. So ideally, we can get there. We can have it happen again. I'm a big fan of having the rivalry that we do with Golden State. You know, as much as they kind of make me a little bit sick thinking about them, the world is more fun when we have a serious rival, and we don't really have one of those in the East. So the best I can get is Christmas Day and the finals, but I'll take it.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think there will still be some interesting things to watch too, and I am just very ready for it. I know the playoff baseball has been great, but I'm really, really ready for some basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
So if people aren't already following you on Twitter, where can they find you?
Yeah, they can find me at A Ralsto. So that's just at A-R-A-L-S-T-O. You know, come for the Warriors blue 3-1 finals and the lead jokes. Stay for the fantastic game recaps. Yeah. You know, there will be occasional pictures of some disc golf stuff too. So if you follow Ben Cox, you might like my Twitter account.
Yeah, but definitely go give Alex a follow. And then we are going to hop right into our next guest. And that guest, of course, is William Bull from Fear the Sword, also Wolf Among Wolves. In my words, he's the Andrew Miller of this podcast. Bill, how's it going?
Left arm feels good. I'm ready to close this thing out.
Yeah, I'm ready to see that wicked slider. Before we get into the serious questions, I have maybe the most serious question possible. Are you ready for Ricky Rubio to wear the number 9 jersey with the Cavs instead of the Wolves?
y'all can have Tyus Jones instead. Can I interest you in a Tyus Jones instead?
Nah.
Pretty much the same thing, right?
I saw on Twitter some dude was arguing with John, I can't pronounce his last name, from the Associated Press.
Krasinski.
Yeah, about how Tyus Jones like sells jerseys. And I was like, really? That's like a thing? It's not? Like, there's no way, but...
No way.
People got to die on their hills, man. So, we're going to hop in right into the questions. The first one we have is, what team has the best chance of beating the Cavs in the playoffs?
In the East?
Yeah, we'll go in the East, because obviously we know who the team is at West.
Okay. In the East, the team that can give them the most trouble, I'll say Boston. No one really. I don't really think. I would never put my money on it unless something changes drastically by the spring. But the team that I think would have the best chance, that I think could potentially play them tough, is Boston. They've got, I guess, enough pieces there to make it interesting if everything goes right, or if the Cavs have an injury or two, or if there's a weird kind of a fluky thing that happens. But I wouldn't put my money on Toronto. I just don't think they're going to have enough to compete again. I thought last year was kind of their ceiling that they reached. And I'm interested to see what Boston looks like with Horford. I think he gives them one more, premium player at the front of their, in their front line, at the top of their team. I think he could be the guy that could make it a very competitive series. Even though the Cavs have answers, I think the Cavs have answers for everybody in the East. So it's not. I'm not saying I would bet on it, but if it would be anybody, I'd be very curious to see if Boston could be the one.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think they're the team I expect for the Cavs to play in Eastern Conference Finals. I think in a year from now it might be the Pistons, but I don't think they're quite there yet. I still think they could use an upgraded point guard. Drummond needs to develop a little bit. My issue with Boston, and the reason I think maybe Toronto can do it again, because they are going to be, they may regress a little bit, but still should be pretty good. Boston, I think, isn't going to be a very good rebounding team. I think the Cavs might just dominate them there, and I think that could really just kind of end the series in some ways. I don't really think they have a good answer for LeBron, and I don't think they have someone that is going to be able to score on the Cavs when it comes to crunch time. I think when it comes down to, they're going to be very good in the regular season. I think if I was going to pick a team to beat the Cavs during the regular season, it would be Boston. They're really deep. They're going to play smart basketball. Horford's definitely going to make them better. But I don't think he's the guy that takes them from a team that hasn't made it out of the first round in the last 2 years to beating the Cavs and going and playing presumably the Warriors in the finals.
Right. No. I don't think so either. And I think you're right about the Pistons. They've got kind of some interesting pieces. I just don't know who. I don't know who would have enough wings to guard all the wings, all the different looks that the Cavs can give you. You have to have a really versatile players, kind of 2 through 4 in your lineup, I think. And I just don't see anybody in the East that has that kind of versatility.
Yeah, I agree. Let me ask you this as a follow-up, and then we'll go on to your next question. If you were going to pick a conference out of the two teams we expect to make the finals, so the Cavs and the Warriors, if you were to say one of them, you had to pick one of them to lose before the finals, who would you pick?
I'd pick the Warriors.
I think I would too, and that seems crazy to me. But I think there's probably, because it's just like they're going to be insane, but it's also like I look at the West and I think, oh, the third best team in the league might be the Clippers.
Right.
And the Clippers, as much as they have depth problems, and much as they're going to have some issues with the Warriors, and if they have one injury, they're kind of doomed, their best four group of guys is really good. Like CP3, right. J.J. Redick, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan is really good and does present some interesting issues for the Warriors.
And I think the Clippers are going to have a lot to prove this year, because I think they probably can all sense that, you know, the clock is ticking on that group together. I think Blake is a really prideful guy who probably is really hurt by how last season ended. So I think they're going to look great in the regular season too. I think they're going to win a ton of games. I don't know if the Spurs can do it. yeah, it seems nuts to me. I think that says more about the East though than it does the Warriors necessarily. But if I had to pick one,
I would agree with that.
I would say it's the Warriors. Yeah,
I would agree with that. You're not ready for the Bill. You're not ready for the Wolves to make the finals this year. I mean, everyone's got them in 50 games apparently.
You know what? I will say that the ceiling for the Wolves this season to me is they make the eighth seed, they play the Warriors the first round, and they steal a game at home. If that's what happens to the Wolves this season, I would be a very, very happy boy.
Yeah, and that would be good for year two of Towns and year three of Wiggins. And I would very much enjoy watching Tom Thibodeau coach up against those Warriors in the playoffs. I would enjoy that, even if it's with a younger, more experienced group than, let's say, what he had with the Bulls.
I'm not saying they're on par or anything, but the Wolves played the Warriors really, really tough last year.
Mm-hmm.
All three times. So
and Cat is great, and I am a huge Wiggins guy. So those are two guys that I think give you something to work with, maybe not this year, but in a year or two. But to go on to the next question. So we're going to look at the two elder statesmen of the Cavs rotation here. Give me, on a scale of 1 to 10, your confidence in Richard Jefferson and Mike Dunleavy.
Oh, boy. Probably like a 5 for each. I think Jefferson's really good play in the playoffs. I think kind of helped a lot of people to forget or overlook. He had a pretty rough regular season.
Yeah, that's understating
it. You know, he wasn't good for a lot of it. And, there are a lot of reasons for that. I mean, I think he was – I'd have to look at the numbers. I don't think he played with LeBron a ton, which is going to make your on-off splits look a little rough.
Yeah, he did play with LeBron a ton, played in 74 games, played almost 20 minutes a game, 5.5 points, shot almost 40% from three – on 2.3 attempts. So, you know, he was like fine, but he really was on another level for the playoffs, especially in the finals when he started that one game and, you know, was really big with Love not really playing at his best.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and both of them, both of them to me, it's going to be they're there to space the floor. It's just with it's kind of like the Sean Marion thing though. Like, at some point, can you still move enough to just be on the court with all of these athletes? Can you literally just be on the court? Or are you too much of a liability just by being out there? And both of that, like, that's a real possibility to happen to both of them this season. And I hope it doesn't, obviously. And, you know, hopefully one of the two can be a rotation guy. So look at it this way. I'll say 5 for each, and if one of the two is an important and impactful rotation player during the playoff run, then both of the signing – or, you know, the trade and the signing, both of them were worth it. You know, hopefully one of the two pans out.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. Dunleavy's looked fine. Like, his bat, he's moved pretty well, I thought, in the time we've seen him. He says he didn't really make a big issue of his back. But back injuries at his age are sort of concerning. And if it rips him of any sort of mobility when he was, you know, he wasn't necessarily a lockdown defender, but he's a very smart defender, that'll be impactful. And I kind of think Jefferson's insurance for him is how I look at it. But I also think if one of them is not playable when it matters, the Cavs might be short a wing. And I already kind of think maybe they're short a wing now because of how much you really do need wings, especially if you're going to try to limit LeBron's minutes in the regular season.
Well, and especially if Iman Shumpert's going to be, you know, a basket case again down the stretch. If they even hold on to Iman Shumpert, if those rumors are true or not, if they're looking to move him. I think
future right. Timberwolf Iman Shumpert.
Oh, my God. What if it's Shumpert for Rubio?
I love Rubio, but Shumpert.
It'd be weird.
It'd be weird, and the Cavs would then really need another wing, and they don't really have ability to get one, and You know, they all, like, Shump, as long as he isn't shooting under 30% from three again and is kind of locked in, I think can be really useful. But I've said this a couple times on this, think this episode, but I think he might be the most important player on the Cavs bench.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. It's either him or if Felder can be, you know, a change of pace point guard off the bench, I think, and can score a little and can take some of the burden off of, you know, Kyrie and LeBron, so they don't have to be on the court all the time, one of the two. I don't know. Shumpert is just, you know, it's been 6 years. He just kind of is what he is. I just don't know if he's ever going to really put it together. Because it'd be nice if he could dribble, or if it'd be nice if he could shoot threes consistently, one or the other. And I'm just not convinced either one of those is ever going to happen.
Yeah. No, yeah, I'd agree. And I think that's sort of the concern with him.
If he took a step, you're right. That would be enormous for the Cavs.
But when do you say he's not going to take a step? When do you just kind of write him off? And maybe that's this year. I don't know. So
maybe that's, you're right.
Maybe that is this year. So we move on to the last question before we get your take on, you know, the overall season. It's a question we actually podcasted about this when he got his extension. Rate your confidence in Tyronn Lue on a scale of 1 to 10.
8 or 9. I mean, I think he pushed all the right buttons. I think the guys believe in him. I think LeBron's behind him 100%. I think he connected with Kyrie. I think he's got a ton of veterans in his locker room to help him do, to help police the locker room. I think he really connects with players, which is a great skill and something you could argue his predecessor lacked, I guess. That was a joke. David Blatt wasn't so good at that. 8 or 9. I mean, you can nitpick at his rotations, and I'm sure we will all season because, you know, we got to talk about something. And this team is going to kind of be on chill mode, autopilot, I think, for a lot of the year. But when it comes time for it to matter, he showed last playoff run, he's good at making adjustments. I'm very confident with the Cavs being in his hands.
Yeah, I mean, this is reading into the tea leaves and in between stuff a little bit. Well, when you go to media availability and you hear the Cavs talk about him, they really kind of just trust. They seem to just trust in him in a way they never did with Blatt. That's been written about. There's just so much with him that I think resonates with the locker room. I think the former player thing matters. I think his relation with LeBron matters a ton because he can actually call LeBron out on some stuff and kind of get LeBron to follow an overarching strategy in a way he wasn't really with Blatt. I would think it's pretty clear.
Right.
You know, he's a really good mentor. He's a mentor for Kyrie.
Yep. I thought the stuff in the recent, was it Maddox? I can't remember who wrote it. The article about Kevin Love, just a little stuff about Lou, you know, telling him to demand the ball and play confidently and to be, you know, be a, just that bad guy, you know, to be tough, to be, you know, aggressive. I thought that was, really good for, it was good to hear because I think Love needs to hear that. And if that message actually got through to him, you know, Love is kind of a difficult guy to read and a difficult guy to coach. But if he's getting through to Love too, and that stuff's sinking in, I mean, you know, is there anybody on that roster who, you know, he isn't reaching? And it's doubtful.
Yeah. I think that was from the Lee Jenkins.
That's what it was.
Was it the Lee Jenkins piece, which they promoted as about the stop in the finals, but it was really about the time Kevin Love saved somebody's life. Like, it was a great story, but there was that, you're right, there was that long kind of couple graphs about Tyronn Lue and encouraging him, and I thought that was very insightful. And obviously Jenkins is the freaking man, so, like, you should, if you haven't read that story, go find it. Just search Kevin Love, Lee Jenkins, it's probably the first thing, or search Kevin Love, Tyronn Lue, and I think it was the first thing I found on Google, so just go check that out.
Yeah.
It's great. So, Bill, we'll end it on this last question. And for you listeners out there, I will finally give my prediction for the year, too, because I haven't over the course of these how many guests that we've had. What is your prediction for the 2016-17 season for the Cleveland Cavaliers?
My prediction. So you want regular season wins and then what happens in the playoffs?
Just however you want to answer that question, I'm good with, because I think there's a few interesting ways to answer it.
My prediction is, and it's hard to say, it's hard to figure out how the Warriors are going to gel exactly. But I think they'll win the East. I think they'll be the top seed in the East. I think they'll win somewhere between 56 and 60 games. I think LeBron will take nights off, and I think they'll be kind of on autopilot a lot, but I think they'll have enough to beat teams, just based on the sheer talent on the roster. I think they'll have a pretty easy road through the East. I think they'll be pushed by a few teams a little bit, but I don't think any series goes to seven or anything like that. And I think they'll have another real battle with the Warriors. I think they're going to win the title again. I really do. And it's not just because I really dislike the Warriors or really dislike Kevin Durant. I just think the loss of Andrew Bogut is huge. And I wonder about Golden State's defense. I don't know what they're going to get out of Zaza Pachulia. I don't know if they're going to be able to find someone else to anchor them. I don't know if Draymond Green can hold up after playing a ton of center all year long or for 40 minutes a night in the playoffs. I'm not confident in any of that. I don't think the Cavs will sweep them or anything. I think it would probably go seven games again, but I think the Cavs would have the upper hand. It feels a little nuts to pick against the Warriors, but I think the Cavs are going to repeat.
You're the first person, I think, on the show to pick them. I don't think Ralston actually gave a title pick, but I think everyone else did pick the Warriors. So it's, I think the only other person that I've heard so far pick the Cavs is Taco Trey Kirby from the Starters. He's the one starter to pick them, and Taco obviously is the best starter because he picked the Cavs.
Obviously.
Yeah, I mean, he's also got the best beard. Like, you know, absolutely. He's, I think, the only one with, like, a real beard. I think Toss has a beard, but whatever. So, here is my actual prediction. Cavs are going to be the win the East. I think they're going to win 58 or 59 games. I think they win it by two or three games over Boston. I think they cruise through the first two rounds. I think Boston wins one or two games in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think, obviously, the Cavs are going to play the Warriors in the Finals. That is not an original prediction. I think it's a seven-game series. I do think LeBron has one more, if not two more, if it's the year after. Just incredible performance in him. But I pick the Warriors in seven. I need to really see, and I need to see this for any team that maybe is going to beat the Warriors, how they're going to defend that lineup of Steph, Klay, Draymond, KD, and Iguodala at the end of the game. Because I think that lineup is just so problematic in... The Cavs can do it, but Love's probably not on the floor for that, to be honest. Is Shumpert, JR, and LeBron enough? Is Jefferson enough? Is Thompson the guy you go to play against Draymond at the five? Like, what do you do there? I need to see that. I think it's very possible they beat the Warriors, and injuries can obviously happen. But I think another finals appearance is in store, and I do think also that LeBron is going to win MVP. That is my MVP pick. And I think it's going to be a really interesting season. I think you're right, though. I think it is going to be a slow build towards the playoffs and towards the finals.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of fascinating because, to be perfectly blunt, I'm not that excited to watch the Cavaliers during the regular season. There's a ton of interesting teams around the league, and obviously I'll watch, you know, as much as I can. But they resolved a lot of their issues, I think, by winning a title. You know, so you're not going to be looking for answers as much right now. Not like we were the last two regular seasons where we were kind of looking for answers. How is this going to fit? How are they going to work together? Like, we know what they're capable of. To me, it's just all going to come down to what they play like in May and June. So I just wish we could kind of fast forward to that in some ways.
Yeah, I don't really disagree. As a basketball fan, I'm really excited to watch a lot of teams. Like, I'm excited about the Wolves. I'm excited about the Nuggets. I'm excited to watch Deion Waiters become a true star with the Heat. I'm excited for Joel Embiid. Like, there's a lot of things I'm really excited for, but we all kind of know where this is headed. And yeah, that to me is going to be really interesting to see, like, how long I can get, like, kiss, like, if it's middle of January and it's like the only good game on is like the Nets, and the only game is like the Nets and the Knicks or something like that. Like, am I going to really be, can get myself jazzed about some aspect of that game? Probably not. You know, it'll be hard, but you know, it's still basketball. It's still going to be good. I'm excited. And I'm excited to really kind of get back to actual basketball, because it's been a long summer of no basketball. And I would always say, even if it's not the most intriguing season to start off, and it feels like it's going one certain way, basketball is better than no basketball.
Correct.
Because yes, it is a fundamental rule of everything. But Bill, thank you for coming on. Thank you. Definitely were, you lived up to, maybe surpassed Andrew Miller on this podcast. Where can people find you on Twitter if they aren't already?
You can find me at Break the Huddle, and you can read my stuff at A Wolf Among Wolves, and of course, Fear the Sword.
Thanks to Bill, thanks to Daniel Rowell, thanks to Alex Ralston, thanks to Trevor, and thanks to Michael Drafto for coming on. This has been definitely the longest episode we've done to date, but that is okay, because we needed to do a big season preview. Hope you enjoyed all of it. I definitely had fun with this. Answered a lot of fun questions, got me in the right mindset to think about the Cavs. Thanks again to SeatGeek for sponsoring the podcast, our ad way back in the beginning, so go back and check that out if you didn't. Again, find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Submit your mailbag questions on Twitter to LockedOnCavs. Email us at LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. And thanks again for listening. Thanks for this preview. This has been Chris. This has been Bill. This has been the other Fear the Sword people on the show. This has been Locked On Cavs. We'll be back tomorrow to preview the season opener. It's finally here against the New York Knicks.